I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. All right, it is Tuesday. The election hasn't started yet. That means it is Candidate Tuesday, as this program tries to single-handedly drag you to the polls November the 4th. I mean, because all the pundits in Washington on the networks are saying, nobody's voting, it's boring, nobody wants to vote. And the pundits here in Indianapolis are saying, would y'all vote, because I don't want to do stories about people jaywalking across the street. That's a memo Jim Scheller sent to his news director, because his news director said, would you find some politics out here, because if not, you're covering jaywalking in Speedway. Anyway, today and next week, we're concentrating on... we did the school board the last 2 weeks, several school districts, and that was very, very important. Now we're going to concentrate on the men and women that that make the laws for our state of Indiana. Oh, tomorrow and Thursday, we'll have prosecutor and sheriff candidates here in Marion County. Friday, we'll have an exclusive interview with Dr. Michael Lomax, the head of the United Negro College Fund. But today and next Tuesday, we're concentrating on state legislators. They are the men and women who make the laws of Indiana, that have governance over things like FSSA, cutting your food stamps. Work one, I can't find the job. Budget, we got a $2 billion surplus, and what are we going to do with it? Anyway, today we're concentrating on the districts that are on the outer edges of Marion County, and some of them snake in the suburbs, because some of you listening to this program live there. Not everybody lives in the inner city. Some of y'all have been successful. You have moved to High Cotton, and you're going around there saying, is there somebody I can vote for the state legislature and change things? Well, yes, there are. In fact, two of the candidates that are here, because this is Democratic hour, Republicans are in the next hour, were people that 2 years ago came to the voters in districts where the pundits, Jim Scheller, thought that they did not have a chance, and they were part of the upset. 2 years ago, now the Republicans are after Carly Macer and Christina Hale. They're coming after them, Drew. They're coming after them like the Walking Dead TV show. But anyway, they are standing their ground. They are here along with Ryan Guillory. Now, some of you think that if you live on the South Side and he's in District 93, when I look down at District 93, it includes some of the northern part of Johnson County, but it also includes beautiful Perry Township, which has gotten much more diverse over the last several. There are black people that live in Perry Township, more than three, no, like a couple of thousand, no joke, in District 93. There's other folks that are down there, and Ryan Guillory is the Democratic candidate for House District 93. Carly Macer is the incumbent, a Democratic state representative in House District 92. That's everything north of the airport. If you live along Rockville Road, 10th Street, 21st Street, north, if you live in beautiful Speedway, Indiana, if you live over going towards 38th Street, going towards the Eagle Creek Airport, and a little bit of Claremont, you are in House District 92, represented by Democrat Carly Macer. And then there is incumbent Democratic State Representative Christina Hale. She's up in the north side in House District 87. That includes Nora, Keystone at the Crossing, all those apartment complexes along Allisonville Road going into Benford Boulevard, Allisonville Road, in Castleton. It goes all the way down to the area to the east of Broad Ripple. That's her district. Was Republican forever, and she turned it from red to blue. They are all in the House. Guys, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I'm going to start with the newcomer who is trying to win down on the South Side. He is Ryan Guillory, Democratic candidate in House District 93. First, welcome. Why are you running?
Pretty much to give a voice to a lot of people down there who haven't had a voice in quite some time, and to give us an option in this election. The things I'd like to do if elected, first and foremost, would be to raise the minimum wage. Mm-hmm. For the past 2 weeks, I took the minimum wage challenge to try to get a better understanding of what it's like to live on the average of $77 a week for food and transportation.
It's easy, isn't it?
Well, that might be the common thought, but I failed pretty quickly each time.
Mm-hmm.
even the second time around with much better planning going around, and trying to prepare for it much better. After 6 days, I was done. Part of the issue, and another one of the issues I want to focus on, is also expanding our mass transit, especially down where we are.
Right.
We have very little, in terms of public transportation. So to try to actually live within that wage, mm-hmm. Is very difficult when you're having to pay for a car, for gas, for all the maintenance involved as well. So those are two big things I want to work on. Also, in Perry Township 2 years ago, right. 3 years ago, and came close in Center Grove, but Perry Township passed the two-school referenda right. for the Perry Township School. Center Grove came fairly close. But I also want to make sure that we're supporting and maintaining a strong and robust public school system in both District 93 and throughout the state. So those are three of the big things that I want to work on if elected.
State Representative Carly Macer is the Democratic candidate in House District 92. Why are you running for re-election?
I'm running for re-election because I really love this job, for starters. I am and have been very devoted to our community almost my whole life, and I feel like it is important to be a voice, and I feel like I'm also District 92. I am our district, and I'm very, very proud of the work we've been doing together, and am very excited about the future of the west side of Indianapolis as well.
State Representative Christina Hale, you're the Democratic candidate in House District 87. Why are you running for re-election?
Oh, thank you. I'm just a regular person that wants to find solutions for people, and there is a lot of work to do yet in Indiana. Our per capita income has been on the decline since 1962. Household income continues to be on the decline. I don't feel enough legislators are thinking about the future. They're making penny-wise, pound-foolish decisions, and most of all, something that's near and dear to my heart, 1 in 6 girls of high school age in Indiana have been raped or sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. That's the second highest rate in the nation. And I've been doing some really good work across the aisle to make inroads to improve this here in our state. And I want to continue that job, at least for now.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Ryan. You mentioned school funding, and when we did interviews with the school board candidates, not just in IPS, but with the townships, they all really talked about the importance of proper funding for public education. Carly, when we interviewed the candidates for Wayne Township, school board, they were extraordinarily passionate about public education and really dogging out the Republican majority in the legislature for taking money away. As you all have gone door to door, how important is funding for public education? Let me start with Ryan. Is that one of the issues that comes to the top when you've gone door to door in District 93?
It's the most common issue that I hear, both in terms of funding and just public education in general. I always say, if you look at, again, Perry passing the referenda 3 years ago, right. If an area like Perry Township, where you wouldn't expect people to vote for a tax on themselves, if it passes there, it really emphasizes how important this is to the residents of Perry Township. So I hear it more than any other issue going door to door.
Carly, I was very surprised with the board members, both the incumbent members and the challengers, how passionate they were about public education and how they were about legislative cuts. How serious is this issue of public education? I know Wayne Township schools, as well as Speedway schools, have a lot of pride, but they have been hurt with budget cuts?
Oh, we have been severely hurt by budget cuts. And I can tell you that for the West Side and Wayne Township, we are really at a crisis, and that, you know, if we don't make some real changes over these next few years, we too know the direction we'll be going. And I hear that a lot at the door. I do believe that funding is a very, very serious issue. Mm-hmm. We are working on other issues that go along with our public schools as well as a community. We've really about 120 members coming together for strategic planning for Wayne Township schools as well as our community. So we understand that there is a funding issue. We are looking forward to finding great ideas and solutions to that, but also realizing that there's a lot more work that we need to do for our public schools outside of funding.
when I talked, Christina Hale with the, board candidates, incumbents and challengers in both Washington Township and Lawrence Township, they said the same thing. And if I include Wayne, I can't reveal what the exact school grades are because I have had to, State Board of Education made me lock them in my safe. I can't, but they're pretty good. How serious is this issue of the state not taking seriously its responsibility to adequately fund public education?
It's very serious, and I've been going door to door in my district since early last spring, and it's something I hear all the time, partly, too, because I believe my district might be the most option-rich, private school-dense district out there, as well as having traditionally very, very strong public schools. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of new tactics that we are leveraging statewide, charter schools, vouchers for private education, etc. But K through 12 education makes up more than 52% of our annual statewide budget. We've taken on these new tactics. We still have the same calcified old funding formula, and dollars for traditional public schools are stretched thin. Something unique to my district that I hear as well, or it might not be unique, but unique to me. A lot of my older residents are really concerned about who's going to follow up, what young families are going to buy their homes, because even though we have this private school option-rich district, traditionally those public schools, those strong, successful public schools, have been the heart of the community, the gathering place, the public sphere. Mm-hmm. You know, they held these neighborhoods together, and the impact on neighborhoods when we defund our public schools and drive resources other places are going to have impact on things also like property values. So why are people moving to the north side of Indianapolis? Well, a lot of times it's for these great public school options. Are they going to continue to buy in these neighborhoods when they can then go to Zionsville, Carmel, outside the donut? It's scaring people.
Are you all nervous about Speaker Brian Bosma saying the Republicans' priority will be to redo the school funding formula? Because that seems like that's opening up a can of worms, because you got to balance off urban school districts like IPS. You got to balance off our rural school districts like, what's the one, Duggar in Indiana that got a lot of publicity, as well as the growing suburban districts, and then school districts in older neighborhoods like the ones you all are representing.
Funding formula is such a nebulous monster. That I agree that
it's more complicated than calculus.
It sure is in my mind. And there are very few people in our state, quite frankly, that truly understand it. I want to know, what does that statement by Speaker Bosma actually mean? It could mean a number of things. I've heard speculation that it has to do with free and reduced lunch and has to do with funding per head, right, per head count, those sorts of issues. I've heard a lot of different rumors. I think we just need more information, because that's such a big statement, it could mean anything.
239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is, we're talking with Democratic candidates for state representative in districts in the outer parts of Marion County. Incumbents Christina Hale in District 87. Incumbent Carly Macer, District 92. Challenger Ryan Guillory in District 93. These are all Democrats. 239-1310. You can send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Christina and Carly, when you guys were here 2 years ago, and I said, what are people asking you about? Number one on the hit parade was crime. It's now 2 years later. The mayor says this is a safer city. Is crime still number one on the hit parade? Add Ryan into that when you knock on doors.
I can tell you crime is certainly still very, very serious issue for us. We are working on finding ways to come up with better solutions for that. I know one of the things that we're doing right now is working with our apartment complexes and the owners and the people who run our apartments. That is a big part of the problem that we have. We really want to get in there and help change the lives of the people who are living in our apartment complexes, and making sure that they are held responsible, the people who are running the apartment complexes as well. And then I've had the pleasure of attending many neighborhood association meetings and crime watch meetings. I have seen my community flourish when it comes to people, really residents, stepping up to have a voice in this. And we're working on many different ways. And again, that goes back to our strategic planning that we're doing in Wayne Township as well, is finding ways that we can do a better job as a community to fight crime.
Ryan, is when you're going door to door down on the south side, whether it's in Marion County or Johnson County, is crime up there on the hit parade?
I do hear it a lot. It's not as pervasive as hearing about education, but I do get a lot of talk about crime. And one thing that I've noticed this year, as opposed to 2012 and past years working for other candidates as well, is that we've been stopped a good number of times by neighborhood captains who will come and ask us what we're doing. And that's never happened before down there. Mm-hmm. So I think it goes to what Carly said, that there's a community investment that we're really seeing there as well, which emphasizes to me that this is an issue important on people's minds, because we're becoming much more proactive about combating this on our own as well.
Christine?
I go to all the community meetings I'm invited to on the north side, and there are many. I continue to hear issues about crime. Last night I was knocking on doors in a condo community just south of 86th Street off of Union Chapel Road. It had just been hit by a rash of break-ins. And I told them a little bit about my bill that I passed in my first session, cracking down on cash for gold stores. From what I hear from my Crime Watch captains and law enforcement, people in my district are kicking in doors. They want two things, gold and guns. And they just turn around and sell them at cash for gold stores with little regulation. Fortunately, after January 1st of this year, thanks to my bill, you'll have to show an ID that will hold the item for 10 days. They'll take a photo of the item, similar to pawn shops. Our district residents have been finding their electronics at pawn shops, not so their jewelry at cash for gold stores, because they just melt them down for their commodity value. That said, Amos, the criminals are a lot more clever than I am, and we can try to keep up with them, but it continues to be a problem. People continue to be afraid, and I just heard last night from a number of women, too, that they're afraid to walk in their community anymore. They just don't feel safe.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name is to the phones, and Natalie, hi there.
Hi, Amos. I have a question. I don't know if this was brought up, but this is about the city of Indianapolis. I had went to an event downtown, and I used the parking meters, and I used a debit card to purchase for my time. And on my bank statement, it showed that I had paid for my meter, but then I issued a citation, and they said I didn't pay. I went to fight the violation. They told me I can go to a certain room. The room is now closed. I filled out information to fight it, and they said that that it's still valid. I have my bank statement to prove that I paid it, and now they're saying that I owe $40 because I didn't pay my $1.30 for my meter. While I was filling out the papers to fight it, it was another lady who had just happened to her, and she said she paid it. She pulled it up on her phone that it went through her debit card, and she got a ticket also. So I don't know if this is happening to more people in Indianapolis, where they're paying for these meters with their cards and they're being charged, but then the city is saying that they're not paying for it, but it's on our bank statement
is
that
this,
we're paying.
Is this a credit card branded debit card or one of those other kind of debit cards?
No, it's through Fifth Third Bank.
Is it like a
connected is to it my a, bank account?
Hold it. Is it like does it have a Visa imprint or a MasterCard imprint
it's
on the
MasterCard.
Debit?
Yeah, it's a legit MasterCard.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that Eventimes, the black-owned vendor that runs the parking meters, isn't accepting a Fifth Third Bank MasterCard debit card? I'm shocked. Have you gotten a court date to go to the kangaroo court that hears things with the parking meters?
No, actually, I'm downtown now, ready to go in the city-county building. I'm ready to use another meter, but I'm going to videotape me paying using my debit card again. I'm going to videotape it. So if I get another violation, I'm going to have it videotape me paying for it.
Well, wait a minute. When you videotape it, you need to send it to, what is that, I-8? Is that what do y'all call it? The reason I'm saying that Channel 8 is in here. Don't y'all have something where people can send you videos? What do y'all call that?
Reported feature at
WishTV. You need to send that video to the reported feature at WishTV.com. Because you know, because you know why I'm saying that? November will be here any minute, and this is the kind of story TV stations love during sweeps month. And you know, Channel 8 is going to be like the station for news coming the first of the year. With the other stations, because you know, Channel 8, they're gonna come back. The other thing I would like you to do, because this is. We have been trying to get the parking meter people on this program, and I think they've gotten the memo from the mayor's office not to talk to me, so this will give me another excuse to go after them. Would you hold on and give Drew your name off the air and phone number where you can be reached, and this will allow me to go to the fancy PR firm that the parking meter people use and say, aha, y'all are ripping off black people and white people, too.
Right. And, yeah, they messing with the wrong person because I have a degree in criminology.
Oh, no!
So they messing with the wrong person because this doesn't make sense.
I'm with you when you're right, and the parking meter deal was the worst deal ever concocted by our maybe he's retiring mayor. But I want to get this information because the parking meter people have refused to come to the African-American community and explain what it is they do, and this may be another reason for that, particularly if you have a Fifth Third Bank branded debit card.
Yes.
All right, hold on, and Drew will get that information. I'll also allow me to take a break at 239-1310. We're talking with candidates, Democratic candidates running for the state house. We'll also find out, isn't there some state law they can use that if you present a valid debit card and it's charged, you shouldn't be hassled like that? It seems to be there ought to be a law. And we got people that would be making the laws in the House. We'll talk with State Representatives Carly Mesa, Christina Hale, and candidate Ryan Guillory. More after these.
Hello, this is Pastor Michael K. Jones, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
We're talking with Ryan Guillory, the Democratic candidate down on the south side in House District 93. Christina Hale, incumbent state representative in House District 87 on the north side. State Representative Carly Macer, House District 92 on the west side. Christina Hale, the legislature the last several sessions has tightened down, strengthened the state laws about bullying with all kinds of requirements that school districts are supposed to be doing in terms of bullying. You've also been a very loud advocate in terms of young girls who have been assaulted.
And boys
who've been assaulted in school, which that's bullying in the worst kind of way. But yet I hear from listeners in the community that the schools are not following the rules, that parents may not understand the rules. The rules are not hidden in handbooks. They're in the handbooks, but they're not prominently displayed. We need to strengthen what the schools are doing and strengthen the communication between schools and parents and grandparents as to what the rules are in bullying and, you know, and make parents understand if their kid feels that they're bullied, report it right away, make sure those reports are in writing and follow up.
I absolutely think so. We need to pursue best practices and consistency of practice among all of our schools. I can tell you anecdotally, for example, in many of our public schools, there is a zero tolerance policy, for example, for sexual activity on campus. That sounds like it would make sense. Mm-hmm. However, all too often we find that there is a perpetrator and a victim. And if you have someone who is a victim of sexual violence or who has been coerced or seduced or is otherwise finding themselves in a very bad situation, the last thing that we want to do is cut them away from that structured instructional setting, the school, that is sometimes the only sort of lifeline they have to getting out of a very bad situation. And I'd also like to add that most likely, most of our schools really have inadequate policies because we have so many crimes and so much of bullying and other things are now being iterated online through social media with new technologies that we haven't even thought about. I mean, 10 years ago, there was no Facebook, there was no Snapchat, and people didn't own video cameras or keep them in their pockets at all times. The law statewide is inadequate to address these crimes, and certainly school policy can be as well. It's just tough to keep up.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name. Let me go back to the phones. And Denise, hi there.
Hi. I have a very concern, and I know it might be off the subject, about the nursing home in the care that they give to residents I've been doing this for 17 years. The people that they put in charge, the administrators, they're making the big bucks, but I haven't seen them falsify medicine. I haven't seen them overdose people and told the nurses to cover it up. The CNA, we work long hours but little pay, and then when you tell the state, you get harassed or you force you or they'll fire you. So what kind of laws can they be in place to give CNAs more pay, because we work short, longer hours, underpaid, and then when we tell the state or we make a complaint, we get harassed or we get fired.
Let me go back. Let me ask a question. When you say you complain to the state, is that to the State Department of Health or is that to FSSA?
No, to the state, because the way they treat the residents. And
but who? What,
over-medicate them.
But wait a minute. What agency at the state? Are we talking the health department? Are we talking FSSA?
The health department.
The State Department of Health.
Yeah.
And then, so if you're reporting it to the State Department of Health, how do you get harassed? The State Department of Health telling your boss?
Yeah, they'll tell our boss, and the boss will harass us about any little thing you do, you're done. It's just a rule. When you report abuse or anything and they know that you did it, you can hang, you're going to either get fired or you're going to have to quit. It's a rule.
Let me ask State Representative Carly Macer, because these state representatives, they're taking notes, because now you call the right people, because this is the state, you know, the people that make the laws. It sounds like the state ought to have, if the State Department of Health is over nursing homes, and if a CNA sees something illegal or unethical, seems to be there ought to be a way for that employee to report it, confidentiality. Do we have any whistleblower laws? Is that something we need?
Yes, Amos, we do, and I will tell you, First of all, I want to thank you so much for what you do. A CNA is a very tough job, and I agree with you. I believe that you should be paid more. I have been in the business of the retirement business for the past 10 years, being a part of a retirement community, taking care of independent and assisted living seniors, and certainly coordinating care a lot for our veterans and seniors, and working with skilled care. Mm-hmm. My mom was a CNA for many, many years, and certainly I will tell you, my experience has been with the health department. Anytime there has been calls made to the health department, to me, they've always been taken very serious. As someone who works in a building where the state comes in, they seem to take things very serious with the history that I have with them. I do know, I believe where she's coming from. As far as reporting things, certainly I can tell you for sure, just doing this work for many years, that it isn't something that people like to have reported. Mm-hmm. They would certainly rather their employees come to them, although I would say that that's not the best decision to make. I think that reporting issues that you see, people are taking advantage in any way or not being transparent with our seniors, it certainly needs to be reported to the health department.
But if after they report to the health department, they call the facility, and the facility says, aha, Denise must have been the one that told them, and starts dogging out Denise, that has a chilling effect.
Sure, and there are laws against that. I know in her break room, in every break room, in every nursing home, in every assisted living community that is regulated by the state, there are whistleblower laws, and she is
there
protected.
There should be a poster?
There should be a
now,
poster.
Let me ask you, Denise, in your break room, along with all the other warning posters, is there a warning poster there that tells you you've got a right to whistleblow?
No, it's got a hotline that you can call, but when you call and report it, you get fired or harassed, and that's what happened in my last job, and I called civil rights and everything because what I even recorded, which I know you can, and I let them know that I was recording them. And the administrator had talked to me so bad because I told corporate, and corporate went and told them, I told state, because they let a couple residents die, and they falsified the Mars book, and they gave the wrong person the wrong doses. And I told exactly what everything was going on, and they made it so bad that I ended up quitting. They were just going to fire me out of quit, but they harassed me so bad and talked to me so bad that
I quit. It was American Senior Community.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that you have had that experience.
The other thing is the facilities you work in get federal funds, correct?
Yeah.
You can call the United States Attorney's office. They have a place where they want to know about wrongdoing that affects federal funds.
Uh-huh.
And you can drop that dime to the United States Attorney.
Uh-huh.
I'm serious about that. It's hard tech.
What's that number?
I don't have it in front of me, but it's U.S. Attorney's Office down on, I think it's North Illinois.
Okay.
United States Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana. You look at you do the search on Google.
Okay.
Yes, and again, I want to just again tell you how much I appreciate the work that you do and how hard that job is and how much it is needed. And whenever we talk about living wage, I'd like to mention that these are the people, this wonderful woman that is calling here in concern of the seniors that she takes care of, doing the right thing, is barely making it.
This is one of these 10-10 people we ought to have, at least.
The growing population, these healthcare workers, these wonderful people like her who are taking care of our parents and our grandparents and our families are not 17-year-olds. They certainly are people that I work with that have been doing this work for more than 20 years and are barely able to make it. And so, again, thank you for doing that. You are a gift to everyone that you take care of, and I hope that you continue on your journey.
Denise,
and I hate that.
Denise, I appreciate the call. 239-1310. Before I take the next caller, the governor this morning is bragging about the unemployment rate has dropped. It's below 6%. In Indiana, we've had an increase in manufacturing jobs. They've not yet released till tomorrow the unemployment rate for Marion County. But these manufacturing jobs, are they occurring in your district? Or, you know, is employment a problem? You know, is employment a problem in districts 87, 92, and 93?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, unemployment is an issue for us. I mean, we are working on many ways to improve our unemployment. I know that one of the great things about being a part of such a wonderful Ben Davis High School community is that focusing on our careers, which we've been doing for 40-something years, with skilled training, that there is such a need. There are people who approach me often about, you know, they filled out many, many applications. They're not getting the work that they really need. So I am very interested in finding the jobs that are needed and matching the people who live in my communities. Most people know that I do a lot on veterans issues, and certainly it's something that we are working on with veterans. I believe that there are opportunities to connect the people who live in District 92 to the jobs that are there. I feel like there is a lot of room for us to be much better at that.
The decision by the state to not ask for a federal waiver on food stamps and reinstate the work requirement for food stamps, is that going to be a hardship on people in your district? Ryan?
I think it will be in District 93, and I think it's going to apply equally across the state.
Let the record show say that's the south side.
That's the far south side.
Far south side.
You can't even see 465 from where we are down there.
See, there's those people listening that don't believe there's people on the far south side on food stamps.
There are. You know, you just talked about unemployment. I think underemployment might be as big of a problem for us, and, you know, like we just heard from Denise in terms of what people are making and trying to get by. We put these requirements back in when we know that there's some fraud, but it's a very minuscule amount compared to the overall program. And this doesn't just hurt adults. It also hurts just multitudes of children who are benefiting from SNAP benefits or other benefits that the parents are getting as well. So this really has a big impact across the age spectrum. In my district, across our racial diversity, across gender diversity as well, it affects everyone.
239-1310. Oh, go ahead, Christina.
I was going to say, we have more than 350,000 children in Indiana that suffer from food insecurity on any given day. That's disturbing. And we know enough about brain development as well, that brains don't develop like they should when you're going hungry. That has an impact on IQ and other kinds of future sorts of skills and development that are critical to growing children. In terms of employment, statistic that Speaker Bosma likes to talk about is that for every person on unemployment, there are more than 2.3 job openings that can't be filled because we haven't properly prepared people to take on those jobs, particularly in advanced manufacturing, which is a very sophisticated.
But if the I get the feeling that all these manufacturing jobs that we're adding in Indiana are out in other parts of the state who goodness knows they need those jobs. I'm not trying to say give me those jobs back, Elkhart. We want them here. It seems that the jobs where Indiana is growing, they're not growing here in the Indianapolis area to match the skills of the people here. That we just seem to be obsessed with getting college graduates with advanced degrees who all want to live downtown, and then they don't deal with Representative Macer that you talked about. Who's going to buy that house out in Chapel Hill when that family that owns that house wants to retire? Oh, Christina, you see what I'm saying? This whole thing, let's have everybody move downtown. Well, who's going to buy those houses out in your districts?
There's a lot of concern about that and well-founded concern. And I'd also just like to say, you know, in my district, we have a lot of retail. We have a lot of service jobs. We have small businesses. Those wages are not growing. Mm-hmm. They're stagnating. And as I said earlier, household income has been on the decline since the early 2000s. Per capita income has been on the decline in Indiana since 1962. We don't have the buying power. We have families that are struggling. We have families that are struggling on the north side and all over our city.
Amos, I'd like to just say that our community, a number of people that I've been working with for many, many years, we are done. We are prepared to fight to the end to make sure that not only do we have jobs on the west side, but we have good paying jobs. We are ready to take on whatever comes our way. And it's not just Carly Macer. It's a group of wonderful people from our business leaders to our chambers, to our superintendents, to our residents, neighborhood associations, our churches. We have banded together.
Do we need an audit? When I say an audit, not an audit to see whether anything was funny business, but an audit to show of all the state incentives that have gone to where jobs, where have they gone? Where have they really gone? Where have the jobs really been produced? And has the blessings been spread evenly throughout the state, or is it just been favored locations?
And I'm ranking minority member on Commerce, Economic Development, and Small Business, and very unusually for a Democrat, I've been endorsed not only by our city chamber of commerce, but also by the state chamber of commerce. I believe because people know that I believe jobs and working families are so important. That said, we have two studies, and I helped to work on the legislation of both of these bills that passed in the past year. One is going to look at all of our statewide incentive programs for business. Mm-hmm. So we keep talking about our tax incentive package that we're in the top five business climates in the nation. Does that mean top five in terms of return on investment for what we're investing in business attraction and retention? We need to find out, and we need to keep the ones that are working and dump the ones that aren't. We need to ensure that our tax base is healthy. Secondly, we have also undertaken a study that has to do with regional economic development, not only best practices, but I also had a successful amendment that improved the bill that will take a look at the bad practices. What are we out there doing wrong regionally, and where are we not performing, and why not?
Well, that kind of regional study to look and see, are we putting too much emphasis on putting jobs where there's empty land in the outer parts of the region or downtown and ignoring places like Speedway and Nora and Southport and Greenwood to some degree, ignoring those older areas of your districts where we used to have manufacturing, where we used to have office parks, and the office parks are half empty, the manufacturing is half empty, and this is where we could put extra jobs instead of, you know, how many more jobs can you put on the other side of Lebanon?
I feel we have been ignored. I feel like that is one of the great reasons why I am sitting here across the table from you, Amos, mm-hmm. and continuing this work that I'm doing, because I am so passionate about it that we cannot just point the fingers at everyone else. We must look at ourselves. We as a community have been a part of getting in this situation. We are rising above this.
And
we are not just pointing the fingers. We are coming up with a plan and ideas to get us out of this.
And that's part of what Beautiful Speedway is doing, where people, if they're going down 16th and Georgetown, they're going through that pain right now, but that's part of redeveloping downtown Speedway, not the track.
Right.
But the businesses there, you got a hospital in Speedway. Lord. That you all came together and said, hey, we're gonna turn this around. We're gonna do something.
Yes. And two, I would like to add to that our redevelopment commission has only been around since 2005. We haven't even spent 10 years on what we are doing, and we have accomplished incredible things. But Amos, it's so important for me to take that education and what I'm doing with those people and work on our development outside of that, starting a new opportunity for a CDC along the West Washington Street corridor. We are very
God
serious about
that. Yeah.
And our Lafayette Square area. Right. What's great about that, Amos, it's never happened. We are actually getting together with all of the development groups so that we can talk as a whole, because we are prepared to be a voice for the West Side. And I will tell you, my next event that I will be doing is a neighborhood association summit, because once we get our voices of our neighborhoods together, we will have everything that we need, not just the plan,
right.
not just the people. We will have the voice, and we are prepared to do all the work it takes to make it happen.
Let me go to Lisa right quick, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
What's up?
Well, I want to discuss the policies as far as schools.
What about it?
The bullying policy.
Okay.
Well, my children attend Indiana Math and Science.
Okay.
The North.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had three or four incidents, and I've had waited on them to see what they were going to do about the issues.
Is this your kids being bullied?
These are my children being bullied.
And you reported it to the school, correct?
Yes.
Did you report it orally or in writing or both?
I've done it orally.
Is there a reason why you haven't followed up in writing?
There's no reason. Basically,
okay, then let me ask
what they're going to do about it, which is nothing.
Well, hold on. When you say they said they were going to do something about it, when did they say that? Are we talking a few weeks ago?
Yeah, well, we're talking about a month ago.
A month ago, and they said they were going to do something about it.
No, they didn't say anything. It was incident on the bus.
Okay.
And actually, that was a problem because they're third party. So they were going to have the cameras pulled
mm-hmm.
and find out what happened. So my daughter came home one day, and she was a straight A's main student. But when she came home, a day after Parents in Touch, she had this paper that she had gotten like a write-up for, and her teacher explained to me that this kid continuously, it's a boy, bothered her, and her teacher believed that she just got fed up and just kind of just said, if you don't stop, I'm going to slap you. So they gave my daughter a write-up that she made a verbal threat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can deal with that. But when my son is actually hit in his forehead, and has a knot on his forehead on the bus, and you don't bother to try to contact me, you kind of just let it ride out to see if I'm going to let it go, I have a problem with that. And your policy is zero tolerance,
mm-hmm.
and I expect them to stick to that, because you just gave a verbal write-up for a child that won't leave her alone. And then I find out when my son gets off the bus in the evening, no one called me, no one made a report. I just see my son with this knot on his forehead when he got off the bus.
Okay, all right. A couple things, and I'm going to first let the representatives or the candidates respond to that, and then I have just pulled up the handbook for Math and Science North, and I want them to respond before I go off on this school. Who wants to respond? Ryan?
Well, it sounds like the issue is that even if the policy is in place, it's not being enforced. So I think Amos was correct in saying, you know, get this in writing so that you have a paper trail to follow up on. And if there's no action that's coming from this, you know, that at least shows, you know, the evidence that this is being ignored. They're not following their policies, and that gives you some recourse down the line.
Now, I have pulled up, Lisa, the handbook. Is this high school or lower?
From K-12.
Okay. I pulled up the lower grades handbook, page 23, for those of you listening at home. And after it goes through their anti-harassment, anti-bullying policy, the last sentence with two asterisks reads, and I quote, "To read the complete Indiana Math and Science Academy anti-harassment and anti-bullying policy, please request a copy from the main office staff." Legislators, why do I think that's a technical violation of state law and a cop-out? The parents have a right for that entire policy should be in the handbook, not request a copy from the office. So I think the first thing, Lisa, is request a copy of the complete anti-harassment and anti-bullying policy of the school.
Okay.
Read it, because I'm willing to bet you a soda pop that they have not followed their own policies.
Correct.
Then you need to follow up. You have the email of the principal of that school?
I do. I've spoken with him.
No, no, no. The time for spoken is over. You need to put your concerns in writing. And you got a pen and paper right in front of you?
I sure do.
And when you send the copy to the principal, you are going to copy the people who supervise that charter school, which is the mayor's office. And you're going to send a copy of your email, too. You ready?
I'm ready.
Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, dot, Brown, B-R-O-W-N,
mm-hmm.
at indy.gov.
At indy.gov.
Mm-hmm. And then the second name is Jason, J-A-S-O-N, dot, Cloth, K-L-O-T-H.
K-L-O-T-H.
At indy.gov. Mr. Brown is the director of charter schools for this city. Jason Cloth is the deputy mayor for education of the city. They're over that school. And in fact, that school is in Representative Hale's district. She may have to go up in there and find out what kind of school says to read the complete anti-harassment and bullying policy, request a copy. I don't think that's the legislature's intent of that law.
Amos, I'll be following
up. Hold on a second. Let the representatives respond.
I'd like you and your listeners to know that I absolutely will be following up on that. And I have judged a science fair at that school. I've been in that school. And I certainly will be returning to see what exactly is going on with their bullying policy and if it is inadequate to do something about it.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. You got your marching orders, Lisa, right?
Yes, sir. I sure do.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 after these with Amos. We'll be back with more after these.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson. And you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light, in the source of inspiration and praise.
During the break, State Representative Christina Hale, Democrat District 87, was talking, coming back on this whole jobs thing.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to make the point that neither the state nor the city tells companies where to locate. There are various sticks and carrots to entice them to locate certain places, sometimes very juicy carrots. But I have to tell you, oftentimes they make these decisions based on good business rationale. And a lot of times they're going where the workforce is that they need to drive their business and make it successful. That said, where we should be spending more time and attention is thinking about mobility of people and the issue of mass transit and how that dovetails with workforce development and also industry throughout our state. People have to be more mobile than they are today. It is laughable. I mean, maybe you, like I have tried to take the bus to the airport or downtown, and it's virtually impossible and unworkable, and it's hard to make that your commute. We have to improve certain issues of infrastructure also so that we can support industry and the development of industry for people so that hardworking people with a good work ethic can get to work.
Do we need to reform TIF districts so that TIF districts are really for areas that need redevelopment and that the changes so that an area like Mass Avenue that needs no more help in redevelopment, if the private sector can't support Mass Avenue after all the investment that's been there, then there's something wrong with the private sector. Do we need to relook at that?
I think TIF can be a great tool. It is a great tool when used properly. I think you're right. A lot of times we're developing places that are just booming as is, and it's just a silly waste of funds, and it's a drain on the tax base. We need to get our hierarchy of priorities together and decide what neighborhoods, what communities do we need to rally around and work that list of need. And we're not being organized about the way we approach it. I think we tend to try to please developers or have pet projects, and we're not thinking about evolving our community over time, making sure that our city and all of our neighborhoods have equal access to success and lifting up those parts that need support.
Let me go to Lewis at 239-1310. Hi there.
No. To you and your guest, Amos.
How you doing?
I don't know if it's a bipartisan panel in there, or legislators. I don't know if it's Republican or Democrat. I got to your show a little late.
It's Democrat.
What I wanted to ask is a couple of questions. One, what's Beth White's campaign number? And number two, the Democrats, they sound like they have the same platform as the president. And I've noticed lately that a lot of Democrats are running away from the head of their party. If you had a choice for someone on the national level to come in and campaign on your behalf, who would you rather have, Hillary Clinton or the president? Because it seems like there's a lot of Democrats more dangerous to the president's agenda than some of the Republicans because they're looking out for their own agenda. And I was wondering which one would you rather have in to speak on your behalf, if you had that choice. But I would like Beth White's campaign number.
I don't have. All right. Beth White's campaign number is 231-7107.
All righty. And I would love a straight answer.
231-7107.
7107.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. I would love a response from the panel.
All right.
Well, I can tell you that would be really hard for me to make the decision on that. I think that I would take the combination of both. I truly admire great leadership, and I think that certainly they have a lot to bring to the table. And as a student who had been involved in politics only the past few years, I admire the work that they're doing, and certainly would enjoy having an opportunity to meet either one of those. But a combination, I will tell you, would be magic for me.
You probably want to add the first lady up in there too.
Yeah, you got that right.
And the other husband, Bill, what's his name?
Yeah, that guy.
You want to add that guy too? All right, 239. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to answer the question while we're on it. As a Democrat running in District 93, we're so starved for help that I would I wouldn't turn down any of them by any means. But I think if we look at the policies that have gone into place the last few years, the Affordable Care Act has helped District 93 mm-hmm. as well as other areas of Indiana. If we look at the economic rebound that we've had, it's helped District 93 just as well as any other area of Indiana. So I'd be happy to have any of them around.
As you all have gone door to door in the district, are people bored? Are they saying we're not coming out? Are we saying, if it's good weather? What's your feel?
What was it that you just said? I think it's something like that. People I sense in my district are tired of politics, particularly federal politics, and they just want solutions for people. They want good sense. And, you know, throughout the time I've been elected, every week during session and then every other week or so out of session, I hold these meetups at a different coffee shop.
You've been to more coffee shops and Mickey D's than the postman.
I really have, and I love it because I get to talk with my constituents from all sides of the aisle, and I find that there are really three parties, the two extremes that really don't want to listen to anybody else But then everybody else in the middle that just want good things to get done, that care about people, care about their neighbors and our community, and they're the people that I hope get out and vote, but they're tired too, because what we do see reflected in the media all too often is ugly and harsh, mm-hmm. and we forget that we're all people just trying to make our way in the world. And when we remember that, it makes me feel so optimistic and glad, and I think the people that walk out of my meetups do as well. But there's hope, but people are tired of the negativity, the constant negativity.
Okay. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. I think that's going to be our last call with State Representatives Christine Hale, Carly Macer, and candidate Ryan Guillory. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
Hi.
Thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say to the candidates, I love the response that you guys have been giving to the questions given to you. I'd like to rest assured with you that you do have my vote. But I do have one concern. I hope you can help me. My question is this. There's a lot of convicted felons that's going to be returning to our streets. And you stated that crime is an issue that you addressed with the neighbors in your communities. Have you ever considered maybe talking with business leaders and, you know, those that own those small shops and see if there's some kind of way to get these guys some better opportunities to get someone to, you know, loosen up the leash on him a little bit, because, you know, I do my part in my community. And, you know, I get very involved in the church and my community. And when I speak to some of these young men, what makes them revert back to the crime is the fact that they don't have an opportunity. And when they got child support and ends to meet and obligation like probation or whatever, you know, situation they're dealing with, they're not making enough money to do that. And they're forced to, you know, desperate times to commit crimes they shouldn't be committing.
I'd like to answer that. First of all, I will tell you, just last week, we had the pleasure in Wayne Township. My friend and superintendent, Dr. Jeff Butts, and I worked with the Julian Center with a program they have called Circles. It's a national program, and it focuses on generational poverty. And I've talked a few times about some of the work we're doing with the strategic planning. And my reason for that, sir, was because the people who are making these decisions to help change and move our community forward need to truly understand what we are dealing with. And that was certainly a focus. We wanted people to feel that. We did a simulation that lasted for around three hours to put people in the situation to try to manage, to try to make it. And I can tell you, it changed. It made a huge impact on the people that are in our group. And it is a way for us to not band-aid the solution, but to work on ways and ideas to move us forward. But how can we do that if people don't truly understand the issues? And it was a pleasure to be able to do the simulation. And I thank the Julian Center and Dr. Butts for helping me with that and to be able to come up with the ideas of how we're going to work on this problem. And I want you to know you certainly are right. And I believe in opportunity, sir. And I believe in second chances. And I certainly feel that there are opportunities that we have to make sure that people who are interested in working and improving their lives are able to do so.
That's Carly Macer, State Representative Christina Hale.
That is a fantastic question. I'm so glad you asked it. In fact, we have more than 5,000 people returning to our community every year from being incarcerated. They're our neighbors. They're our colleagues. They're people we want to get back in the workforce and being successful. And we have not done a good enough job helping them. I grew up in a prison town, Michigan City, Indiana, and I can tell you how important this is firsthand from having lived it my entire life. And toward that end, I want to just give a shout out to one of my favorite constituents who is working on this issue at the grassroots level every day. That's Anthony Beverly, who is a fantastic man working with other men that want to come back, take control of their lives, and be productive, active citizens. We need more people like Anthony. We need more people supporting Anthony's efforts and others like him throughout our city. And I'm trying to do my little part, and I want to implore everybody else listening, let's all pitch in. I mean, if Indianapolis can take on the Super Bowl and be so successful at it, let's take on another goal that's more important and impactful to our community, like this issue, and rally around it.
Ryan Guillory, real quick, and Anonymous, thank you for that call.
Yeah, I think it requires us to take a comprehensive approach, and I don't want to belabor the points that Representatives Macer and Hale just made, but I think that has to be the approach business individuals and our educational institutions as well to try to address this and reincorporate these people back into our communities.
Our standard closing question, if people want more information about your campaign, we'll start with State Representative Christina Hale. How do they get a hold of you?
Thank you. On Twitter, at HaleIndy, H-A-L-E-I-N-D-Y. On Facebook at facebook.com, say Hale yes, or feel free to give me an email at chale1722@gmail.com.
State Representative Carly Macer.
Well, you can start off with carlymacer.com. You can also reach me on Twitter at Carly Macer, and you are always welcome to find me on Facebook. I have Carly Macer for State Representative and Carly Macer. And I would like to close by saying that I am everyone's candidate and would love your support and your vote on November the 4th. Amos, thank you for having me.
All right, and Ryan Guillory.
You can visit my website, ryangillory.com. It's G-U-I-L-L-O-R-Y.com. There I've got my phone number and email address. You can contact me. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. All are linked from the website, so feel free to contact me anytime.
Ryan Guillory, Democratic candidate in House District 93 on the south side, Perry Township, upper parts of Johnson County. Christina Hale, north side, northeast side of the city, Nora Keystone at the crossing, the Glendale area, the Castleton corridor, State Representative in House District 87, and State Representative Carly Macer, the Democratic candidate in House District 92, Wayne Township, beautiful Speedway. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. More candidates after the break. It's Afternoons with Amos after the...